Okay, just a couple of final touches on the sugyas of cholim. So I mentioned last week that there's a takanas chachamim not to take a medicine for a chole, but there are some exceptions to that rule. One of those exceptions being if the person is a chole, it means enough of a chole, and a chole she'ein b'ris hakon, enough for a mishkav, so then he would be permitted to take medicine. Are there any other kulas in terms of medicine? So the Gemara says, the Mishnah actually says in Sefer Shabbos, that if it was called Michael Briam, that's also okay. If it's something that healthy people do, so even though, according to most poskim, you're taking it for medicinal purposes, that's still okay. That's the pashtus and the halacha, even though there are some ma'ira that there may be questions with that sheet. But that's the way we generally assume the halacha. That even though I'm doing it not for healthy reasons, I'm doing it for sickness. Say I have a sore throat. So a sore throat, I want to take a cup of tea. So I'm taking the cup of tea not because I love tea, but I'm taking it because I have a sore throat. I don't drink tea the rest of the week, just when I have a sore throat. So we assume that luckily that's okay. Why? Because people drink tea when they don't have a sore throat. Healthy people drink tea also. So whatever is considered to be Michael Briam was never included in the Gezeirah. That's what we generally are making. There is a big machlokes in the last generation about what the status of vitamins is. Is vitamins considered to be medicine? Is vitamins considered to be almost like food? Whether or not this is taller than the machlokes in the FDA is another story. The FDA also spending the last 100 years trying to figure out whether vitamins are a food or vitamins are medicine. I think as of now, they're still treated as food, so they're not governed by some of the strict laws that govern medicines in America. So, not that there are no strict laws that govern food, but that's a different chelik of the FDA. So, Ramesh has a long trip about this, about what the status of vitamins are. So, there are some poskim who are making a lot right, that it's totally mutter, it's just a food substitute. It's nothing, it's not medicinal in nature, and others are makel. So, others are machmer. So, it's funny because it's sometimes presented like a dushal of the Tali Zebuzah, whether you can have trace of vitamins or not. Because generally assume when you have something that's a nifso me'achila, so you're something that's nifso me'achila is not treif mid'araisa, but it's still a problem in the rabbanon. So if it's being done for medicinal purposes, it's probably mutter. So some want to argue that if you treat vitamins as being food, you want to be mekel and uchashabes, that you have to be machmer and uchashtreifus, and vice versa. So I'm not so sure those things are totally bechlal zebezeh. So you can make a case that they're fundamentally like a Michael Briam kind of a thing. On the other hand, I'm only doing it because the doctor's telling me to do it. It's not that I'm sick. The doctor's telling me just to take vitamins because it's good and healthy for me. But I'm not really doing it as a refuah. On the other hand, the whole svar why you're allowed to have tray for food when it tastes bad is because there's no svar of achshavei. The Rush writes in Sochim that the reason why midrabbanan you're not allowed to eat bad tasting tray for food is because you're machshavei to be achila, because you're so excited about having it. So you're not excited about taking vitamins, about taking medicine. So therefore, some place give them in your day right that since you're not happy about doing it, you'd rather not have to do it, so then the svar of achshavei doesn't apply. So you can argue that vitamins are mamash walk the tightrope, that in Hilchos Shabbos, we can ignore calling it refuah, we can call it a Michael Briam, because a lot of people do it even without any ailments whatsoever. On the other hand, you could still say that it's more to take trade for vitamins, because nobody wants to take vitamins, they're a waste of time, waste of money, but the doctor tells you, the nutritionist tells you, it's a good idea to take them. So whether they're right or wrong, whatever it is, that's what you're doing. You're doing it not because you want it, you're doing it because somebody's telling you to do it. So I thought you could be a shtickle maker on both sides of these equations, but I'm worried that there are people disagree with both sides, both those things that I just said. But again, in terms of Hilchos Shabbos, so yesh v'yesh. If I use it, tell people, like, if it's not such a pressing vitamin, so you don't take it, or you take it at night, you figure out nature. If it's something that's chik lo yavo, you gotta take, so then there are mekilim who say you're allowed to take it on Shabbos. It was never really included in the Gezeirah. There's another shayla the person can have. Let's say you have a medication that if you don't take it, so not sure, you're not going to get better, you're going to get worse. So let's say you started taking a medication for the last couple of days, and now you stop. So your stopping is going to throw back the system. So then most of the post can assume that that's okay. So the usual example of that is antibiotics. And antibiotics, if you take 2-3 days of antibiotics and you stop taking them, so you're probably going to get sicker than you were beforehand. I think the, and I'm not a doctor, but I think the basic reason for that phenomenon is something along the following, that when the antibiotics start to kill the bacteria, so they kill the weaker bacteria first, the ones that are most susceptible to getting killed by the starker ones. The stronger ones are holding out, so they need a couple of more days extra to get rid of those also. Again, this is a very layman's version of what's going on, so don't misquote me, this is in the medical journals. So the more, the stronger bacteria still holding on, so if you only take 2-3 days of antibiotics, so it doesn't kill the stronger ones, so now the stronger ones are left, and they're Makai and Prove, Humilus, Arts. So now you have, instead of having before, you had a couple of half-baked the bacteria and a couple of Shtaka guys, now the whole minion, they're all Shtaka, everyone's good, so now you're sicker than you are. Again, it's not perfectly exactly what happens, but you know, some doctors with a smile try to explain to me that's kind of what happens in some unmedical way. That's kind of what happens, and therefore you find this phenomenon that you're a smart aleck, you take 1 or 2 days of antibiotic and you feel better, you stop taking it, you will inevitably get sicker than you were before. Exhibit A. Anyway, there are some poskim, Shlomo Kluger, a famous Kluger, Shlomo Kluger held that any medicine that you started from before and you can continue to take. So he had a different way of reading the sugya. In the sense of the Zohar talks about this a little bit. The svar seems to be that the whole gzei was bishop shchikas samamonim. So if I already know in advance that I need this regimen of medicine, so there's no gzeir anymore. The gzeir is, I get sick on Shabbos, he wants to start taking medicine on Shabbos, so they come out, we're afraid he's going to go to the backyard and go chopping up his medicine. But if he's been on the same medicine for the last 5 days, so he already prepared before, and maybe the whole gzeir doesn't apply. So we don't really follow that view, so we follow that svara, even when it comes to things like antibiotics, where not taking it one day will throw you back. Well, let's say we rely on that for birth control pills, because if a woman doesn't take one day, it's going to throw her system back. It's going to interfere with the whole process. For Shlomo Zalman, it's makel that when you have like a doctor's prescription of you have to take the medicine for 7 days. So even though it's not like an antibiotic that it's going to really ruin you if you stop taking it, but there's a regiment of it. It's ready nikva, nimnum gomu, that you have to take it for X amount of times. So then if Shlomo Zalman was makel, you can also continue to take it on Shabbos. But Shane can, let's say a guy just has, he has allergies, so it's a bad allergy season now. That's, many of us are suffering from bad allergies now. So he takes an allergy pill on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then he wants to take it on Shabbos. So Shlomo Kluger would take it on Shabbos also, because you started before him. So here, most posts would probably disagree then and said, no, that's not a regimen of pills. I mean, you take it on a bad day, you don't take it on a good day. You know, it happened to be you took it the last couple of days, but it's not a regimen of medicine. And it's not like antibiotics. If you miss an allergy pill, you don't become worse allergies the next day. You just that day you feel miserable. So I think that we should have the following pshar on this, that either things like antibiotics we could be making on, or things that have a real, prescription, the doctor really wants you to take it for a certain group of days. So those who want to rely can be making on. If it's other things, Tylenols and allergy pills and a little stomach ache kind of stuff, so it depends how sick the person feels. So the person feels like he's just incapacitated. Someone came to me in Shabbos right after davening this week, and they said to me, the allergies are so bad that they push it. I asked them, are you going to be able to sit down and have your suda? And he said, I can barely function. I said, I'm just going right. Good. That's good. I'm happy to hear that you can't function, because you can't function. You become a chaylish ebre sakana, and then you're permitted to take your allergy medication. So I think those are the factors that we should be looking for. Okay, so I think that's the one less cooler that Yom Tov Sheni, so it's supposed to take medicine except for Rosh Hashanah, but otherwise Yom Tov Sheni is supposed to fight. Back to that story. So now we embark upon our last topic for this Zman, and that's the issue of Amir Eliyakim. So it's very hard to do justice to Amir Eliyakim in 15 and a half minutes, but we'll try to do the best that we can. So Amir Eliyakim seems to be only mid the Rabbanan. I say seems to be. The Gemara says it almost says it befavorish a few times that it's only the Rabbanan. There's a Rashi and Chumash of Pashas Bo that quotes a Mechilta that almost sounds like it's a Deraisa. The Mechilta comments on the Pasuk, Ka'acha she'yo'ochel kamulcha lo ye'ose bahem. So the Lashon lo ye'ose bahem, the Mechilta says, means Malacha shouldn't be done for you. So that means the Akum shouldn't be doing Malacha for you. So the simple reading of Mechilta is that's Mamish Deraisa. So the other Mefarshim point, that can't be. The Gemara says black and white. That's not a Mid Rabbanan. So we're not sure what the Mechilta means. We assume that it's only an Issa Mid Rabbanan. There is a Gemara in the end of the fourth paragraph of Yevamos that's the comments on the pasuk, if you nafish ben amoscha v'hager, so v'hager doesn't refer to a ger tzedek. Ger tzedek is a Jew. He's a Jew. So who is the ger in the pasuk? So the ger is the ger toshav. So from here you see there's an issa for ger toshav. So what does that mean exactly? So Rashi learns that a ger toshav is not allowed to do malacha on his own on Shabbos. Even I'm not asking him to do malacha. There's an issa gam on chul Shabbos for ger toshav because once he's makabel not to be avid avodah zarah, so included in that kabbalah is to be shomer Shabbos because chul Shabbos and avodah zarah go hand in hand. So Rashi seems to learn a strange thing. It's a kolzman that he wasn't makabel anything. He's just an achum. So then he's bound by the shemitz tibrei noach and chul Shabbos is not part of the shemitz tibrei noach. But once he's makabel to be no longer an avid avodah zarah, so it's not shayach to have a kabbalah shalol avid avodah zarah without having a kabbalah lishma Shabbos. It's a very strange understanding. That's what Rashi seems to say, that there's a din min haTorah that the ger toshav has to keep Shabbos. So Tosafot says they never heard such a thing. Tosafot says we should take anywhere. Anyway, is where it says according to Rashi, but Tosafot says we never heard such a thing. So what does the Gemara mean by ger as a ger toshav? So Tosafot writes that means that you're not allowed to ask a ger toshav to do malacha for you min haTorah. Amirli Yaakov says Tosafot is only the rabbanim because he's an akum, he's a goy. But once he becomes into the category of a ger toshav, that becomes much more problematic, and then that's called malacha done by ger toshav on behalf of the Yisrael, that would be problematic, even mid the Raisa. If we would have a ger toshav as man as that, that would spell a lot of trouble for us, because if you're willing to say that we have certain goyim out there who are different from ger toshav, then you have to be very, very careful. Can't ask them to do anything for you. All the kulas, what we have in Amir Yaakov, Shvus Teshvuses, and Chaylim, and half a dozen kulas that we have, all predicated in the assumption that Amir Yaakov is on the Midrabanan. If that factor changes, that basic premise changes, then the whole edifice falls down. So then the all of Yaakov would become a deraisa. So we probably don't have any ger toshav b'zman hazeh. The Rambam writes that without yovel, based on the Gemara of Erech, without yovel, you cannot have a ger toshav b'chol din yator b'chol. And therefore, b'zman hazeh, we can have the nicest, firmest, friendliest goy who's not over the b'zot, doesn't kill people, doesn't eat live animals, whatever, he keeps everything kedas for then. But he doesn't have the ability to become a ger toshav. We don't have the yovel, so we can't be makabel ger toshav. So the Ravid has a different understanding of that Gemara and Erech, and the Ravid understood that that's only got to be certain halacha that he's not a ger toshav b'zman hazeh. But it is possible to have a ger toshav b'zman hazeh. So according to the Ravid, that would be a loaded question. Where what if he doesn't have a formal kabbalah? Just I know he's a god. He's an honest guy. He doesn't steal. Doesn't kill. Doesn't do eishazish. Doesn't whatever. Doesn't do avodizara. He's a good, upstanding, honest, practicing ben noach. So according to the Ravid, it could be he may have a certain status of a ger toshav vis-a-vis some halachas. So if that would be the case, that would spell disaster for Hilchas Amir Yaakov. Every time you ask a guy to do something, you got to make sure he's not a ger toshav. We usually don't assume that way. We usually assume that your average guy in the street today, either because of the Rambam's reason or because of some other technical quirk, is not really a ger toshav. The Chazanish writes that even according to the Ravid, you only can become a ger toshav if you really believe that it's Torah's Moshe. If a guy is just not killing and not stealing and not eating wild animals because he thinks it's the ethical, moral thing to do, so then that's a nice guy, but that's not a ger toshav. A ger toshav has to be someone who's makabel b'Torah's Moshe. So most people don't exist like that. You have a few of these Noahides, so people floating around the south who may fall into that category. For the most, the average non-Jew asking to do malachi on Shabbos, it's only drop on it. So the bottom line is, there's no real Amir Yaakov deraisa for us, for the most part, because we don't really accept that mechilta, whatever in the world that mechilta meant. And whatever Taisa said in Yevamos about Geri Taishav is probably not too irrelevant for us. So we're going to look at Amir Yaakov through the eyes of it being an only Nisat Rabbanan. Why in the world did Chazal make this Nisat Rabbanan, and what was the goal of it? So there are different reasons that the Rishonim give. So some Rishonim say that it was a gezeira unto Yisrael, that we're afraid that it's not getting into the habit of asking Goyim to do things. So you can have that mindset, oh, no problem, I can turn on lights at Shabbos and I can have all these things I'll just have my neighbor do it. And 1 week the neighbor won't be there, so you'll do it yourself. I mean, if you get into the habit of having malachas done for you on Shabbos, it's going to lead to the day Chil Shabbos and the day Yisrael. There are others, Rashi in one place writes that it's based on the idea of shlichus, that even though we paskin that meikra, then there's no real shlichus between Jews and goyim, and there's no shlichus for avodas, whatever it is, but mid the rabbanan, it looks a little bit like shlichus kamoisa. So when I have a goy do something for me, it gives off that impression that I did it myself. So it's a mechzel shlichus lechumra. There are others who say it's based on something totally different. It's based on v'daber davar, that at least part of Amir Yaakov is based on the fact that I'm not even allowed to talk about malacha. So I'm not allowed to talk about malacha, even though I'm not even doing the melacha, I'm not allowed to stay on Shabbos. I'm driving somewhere for Shabbos. Let's do the melacha mitzvah. So to ask a guy to do a melacha for you on Shabbos, so you have an array of different reasons. Some say it's just stam a bizarin of Shabbos. It's disgraceful to Shabbos to have a goyim walking around turning lights on and off, etc. So there are an array of different reasons why Chazal instituted this system. But the bottom line is the issur exists. Mishnayos and sugyos shleimus in the Gemara. And again, under basic circumstances, it's only going to be midir rabbanon. There are, because it's only the Rabbanan, there are certain kulas that were built into it. So we spoke a little bit about these in the past. Chazal lifted the Yisr of Mir Yaakov for Chalashem for Sakhan, we mentioned last week. Chazal lifted the Yisr of Mir Yaakov for Yishev Eretz Yisrael. That's the, we spoke about back in the Kosev days. That's the Gemara in the first Baruch Masech Gittin, when the Gemara talks about how they permitted you to have goyish lawyers sign all your documents. You're trying to buy land in Eretz Yisrael from a goy on Shabbos, so they were mad to you to have the goyim do all the signing for you, even though that's the pasha that's writing in a Torah. And it's okay because the Mir Yaakov and Mokom Yishev Eretz Yisrael is mutter. According to some Rishonim, Mir Yaakov Mokom Bris Milah is mutter. So we have an array of different situations where Chazal felt that it was very, very important. So they were willing to be mad at the Yisiv of Mir Yaakov. There is a one opinion in Rishonim, the view of the Bala Itter, who says that they were mad at the Yisiv of Mir Yaakov any Mokom Mitzvah. Whenever there's any issue of Mokom Mitzvah, everything's about you. You can ask your guy to do anything and everything for you. You want to learn, you want to daven, you want to any tzarech whatsoever. That was the view of the Bala Itter. So the Rambam writes that there were communities in Europe that used to rely on this. Now, the Rambam doesn't say it's great. He just tells you that people used to rely on this. This was where that notion of a Shabbos boy came into existence. That most things were some kind of Mokom Mitzvah, something or other. So they used to have goyim doing things for them right and left in Shabbos. So later folks can say it's not really right to do that. The Baal HaMitzvah is really a Das Yochid. So what do we pass in? In terms of having goyim doing things for us with Mokom Mitzvah, so we spoke about this many times, that this was also a big machlekes in Rishayim, but we pass in Halacha that you're allowed to have a goy do something for you if the Isra itself is only mid the Rabbanon and there's some significant tzarech for it being done. So I'm allowed to ask a goy to do a Rabbanon for me if it's a Mokom Mitzvah or something. So let's say the area that I am is not a Rishis Ram Deraisa, most likely not, but there's no Erev. So then I can ask a goy to carry something for me with Mokom Mitzvah. Or we spoke a little bit about the lights, and there are certain things turning off lights, on lights, different things of Mokom Mitzvah, depending on what the kind of lights they are. So they may also be under the Rabbanans. So other kind of electrical appliances, depending on what you think about electricity in general. So you have an array of different opinions about those topics we spoke about. But the basic understanding that we pass at Shulchan Aruch is that a Shvus to Shvus with Mokom Mitzvah is mutter, and a Shvus to Shvus with Mokom like Tzar Gadol is mutter, even if the person is not necessarily a Chayla, according to some Achronim of a Shvus to Shvus. So we take a lenient view towards the Mir Yaakov when it's Mir Yaakov on the Rabbanon, and there is some kind of a significant tzarech depending on different gradations of what's considered to be enough for tzarech. There's an area that we're even more makel on in Mir Yaakov. That's when you have a tzarech rabim, when you have a great, great mitzvah tzarech rabim or something. So then we would probably be mata even Mir Yaakov on a deraisa. The Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Chayyadam that we don't like to rely on that Bala Itter all the time, but for tzarech rabim we're willing to be more makel. So the example that the Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Chayyadam is, let's say the Eira fell down in town. So if the Eira fell down, so no one's going to know. So people are going to be nichshel, they're going to be carrying shalakidin. So the Chayyadam says that's like a mitzvah shel rabim, it's such a chashva mitzvah. So we will let the goy, we'll ask the goy to tie the strings and do the nail and stuff, banging lechis, all kind of bone, all kind of stuff that would be the rice and the malachas. So we let the goy do that because of the tzarech harabim. That's again another gradation in terms of the kulos. But again, everything we're talking about is all because we're working with the assumption that Amir Yaakov is only Yitzhak Midrabban in the first place. When I ask a guy to do something for me, that problem, Amir Yaakov, so that could also be violated even if I didn't ask the guy directly. If I asked the guy even in a remez, that could also be a problem. But here the halacha differentiates between a remez b'derech tzivui versus a remez shlo b'derech tzivui. So let's say if I say to the guy something like, it's light in the room, can you do something about that? So even though I didn't say turn off the light, that's the same. So I said to him, can you please do something about that? So that's a tzivui, that's a command. So that's the same as telling him to turn off the light. But then you have a tzivui, what's called remesh shaloi b'derech tzivui. where I don't tell him to do anything. I just make a remez. And the remez is very, very, it doesn't identify with a particular action, the chlal. I just say to the guy, it's a lot of light in the room. I'd love to go to sleep. I didn't conclude the statement by saying, can you do something about that? So, or I don't say, you know, can you please figure out a way to make it darker, you know, in the room. I don't tell him what to do. I just commenting on, you know, simply to know what's going on, hoping that he catches on. So that's what the Remish Lubbeder Tzivoy. So Remish Lubbeder Tzivoy is sometimes mutter, sometimes lachta. It depends. So if the resulting malach that the guy is going to do on his own is going to be Dabra Mahana Esa Yisrael, let's say, for example, it's dark in the room. So I bring the guy into the room and I say, gee, it's so dark in here, so chaval, I wish I could read. And he turns on the light. So even though that was a remez, but now I'm nene from the light. So that's a problem, because the Mishnah says in Shabbos that if a goy does a malach on his own for me, that's a problem. If I'm nene from it, so let's say I didn't even ask the goy to do it. The goy walks in and turns on the light for me, knowing that I want the light on. I'm not allowed to use that light in Shabbos. So Kavachomer, I can't set up a scenario, give him some half baked remez that he catches on his own. No, for sure that's going to pose a problem. So a remish lebeder tziva would be mutter when there's no direct hanah from the malach afterwards. Let's say, for example, making it dark in the room. So we assume making it dark, that's not really called being nen. I'm not nene for the dark. Dark is a philosophical discussion. Is darkness an entity or is darkness a lack of light? So when the goy turns off the light, we assume he didn't create darkness for me. He just removed the light. So that's not called being nene from the active hanah from the malacha. So in theory, I could say to the guy, you know, it's very light in here. It's hard for me to sleep. Maybe it's mutter for not sleeping. Maybe other reason. Maybe that's called the chayla. But even putting that aside, if I just make this very, very vague kind of a statement, that's a remish lo b'derech tzivui. It's not something that actively brings about tana to the Jew. So then that's probably going to be mutter as well. The Mishnah tells us that the Isser of Amir Liakum can be violated even maybe a yom, even if I talk to the goy before Shabbos. So clearly that's not a violation of Davar Dover. It has to be one of the other reasons that we mentioned. But the Mishnah Beferish, that there could be an Isser of Amir Liakum even if I told him to do something from before Shabbos. So to that background that the Mishnah at the end of the first breakfast of Shabbos discusses, what's the din if... If I ask a guy to do something from before Shabbos, but I don't specify to do it on Shabbos, I can leave it vague, I leave it up to him. So if I come to the guy and I say, listen, I'm hiring you, I come to him Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock, so listen, I'm ready to come tomorrow at 8 o'clock in the morning and paint my house. So I can't help do that. Even though the Amir was on Friday, that's a problem. What if I bring a suit to the cleaners on Friday afternoon? And I say to him, listen, you know, I need to have to pick up the suit on by Wednesday. So clean the suit. And that's a good chance he's going to clean it on Shabbos. So that's okay, because that's what the Gemara explains. That's Akav Adaita Dinav Shikov, and he's working on his own pace. He's not getting paid to work 9 to 5 on Saturday. He's getting paid to clean me a suit. He chose to clean the suit on Shabbos. He could have done it on Tuesday, could have been Shabbos or Friday. So he's doing it on his own time. So that's okay. So that's the source for we do this all the time. We give clothing into cleaners. We give other kinds of jobs into Galatian workers. And we assume that that's okay. So the post can just highlight that it's only okay if the goy really has a chance to do it not on Shabbos. Let's say if I bring a suit into the cleaner at 5 o'clock, Shabbos starts at 5:15, and I say, I'm picking you up tomorrow night at 6 o'clock. So then I didn't give him it takes more than 15 minutes to clean the suit. So then obviously he's being forced to do it on Shabbos. That's like a Amir Liakum mamish. That's a problem, even though the Amir happened on Friday. But if I say to him, let's say I bring in the suit at 4 o'clock and Shabbos doesn't start until 6 o'clock, and it only takes an hour to clean the suit. He used to be 1 hour cleaning here in the corner of I don't even clean anything, but he used to give him a suit, and an hour later you pick it up when it's clean and dirty. So it takes about an hour, let's say, to clean directly the suit. So I give it to him at 4 o'clock, and I say to him, listen, I need it back tomorrow night at 6 o'clock. I gave him an hour now to do it, so as long as he has that, he's probably not going to do it now. He's got 4,000 other suits ahead of my suit, but that's his choice. He can do my suit now and do the other suits later. So he chose to do it on Shabbos. That's not my problem. Well, let's say I give a car to the mechanic. So I give the car to the mechanic on Friday morning. I say, listen, I need it Monday morning, so he can work on it all day Friday. He's lazy. He's not going to do it. That's his choice. He chooses to do it on Saturday, so that's his choice. That's the night of the Nafshe. What if I give a suit into the cleaners on a Friday right before Rosh Chia? I tell them I need it Monday morning, and I know the guy is closed on Sunday. So I'm basically know that he's in. I'm pushing him to do it on Shabbos. So get the post, give him any post, he'll make a lawsuit. What do you mean he's closed on Sunday? He wants to be closed on Sunday. Let him, he wants to go to the ball game, he wants to go fishing on Sunday. So that's why he closes the store on Sunday. No one's stopping him from doing the suit on Sunday. That's a back of the lavshay. So some argue maybe that's different if you live in a town with blue laws. So if you live in a place like in Bergen County, where let's say I would take the cleaners are not allowed to be open on Sunday. I don't know if it's true even anymore. But he's not allowed to be open on Sunday. So I know for a fact that he's going to do it on Shabbos. So some want to argue, I know for a fact that he could. So he won't follow the blue laws. So we'll get fines. It's all diet and option. It's not impossible. It's impossible. You know, impossible. The word impossible is a big jump. So there are different nuances of poskim as to what's called possible, what's called impossible. The bottom line is, as long as you give him a little bit of a window that he could theoretically do the job, maybe LGL, either before Shabbos or after Shabbos, not forcing him to do it on the spot. So that, technically speaking, would be okay. However, there's a big exception to that rule. That's if, what if the job that's being done is not being done on his premises, it's actually being done on your premises. So let's say I hire a guy to do a job, and I don't specify which days he comes. I said, I'm going to pay you at the end of the month when you finish you finish getting the job done. As long as it takes you, I'm going to pay you. You choose which days you want to come. And he pops into my house on Saturday morning to do the... Saturday decides to paint my ceiling. Saturday decides to come and do my lawn or something. So you could argue, I didn't hire him to do it on Saturday. I hired him to come a few hours in the course of next month. So he chose to... You know, I hired him to fix my, to manicure my lawn, or whatever the job is, and he chose to do a dafka on Shabbos. So what do you say? I died to the nafshmas. No, that's not the case of the Mishnah. The Mishnah's case is when it's bevesa akum, but if it's bevesa yisrael, that's a problem. Bevesa yisrael. So then we assume halacha. That's a problem. Why is that? That's like a marisayin dikendin. Everyone's going to come and see that a goy is coming to work in your house on Shabbos. How do they know when you hired him? And, you know, could be that you hired him today. So that gives off a bad impression. So that was also mid the Rabbanim. So that was a big machlokes Rabbi Tam and other Rishonim. This is called a long time in the first part of Shabbos about machlokes Rabbi Tam and the other Rishonim about again the end of the first part of the Zohar and Shabbos about can you build your house and a couple others. Let's say when I build a house, so I hire a contractor. So in the days of the Rishon Lezion, I hire contractors. I don't know how to build my house myself, so I hire a guy who knows how to build. So I don't say that, listen, I need you to come every single day from 9 to 5 every day, come on Saturday, come on Tuesday. I say, listen, I'm hiring you, I'm giving you $100,000 to $1 million to build my house. When you finish building my house, so then you'll get your full salary. So the guy decides that he wants to work, wants to come work on Shabbos. So Rabbi Tam says that Nikud, and he thinks it's okay. He says he doesn't think there's any difference between that and the giving the clothing to the Goyish cleaner. So Tosfos quotes the other day as a disagreed with Rabbi Tam and said, nope, that once it's done the basis role, that's a problem. That's a we follow Allah, that you're not supposed to have it done. Tosfos quotes that when Rabbi Tam built his own house, he didn't want to rely on his own kula. He knew that he was a Das Yachid. So he was saying, he said his kula. In the end, he didn't even rely on his own kula, Tosfos writes. So our meaning is we don't let that. So there are some who suggest, Bishop Brewer quotes a whole whole shayla, that maybe that concern that we won't let it being done because we're afraid it gives off that impression that you hire the guy right now. So maybe that's true when you have certain kind of malachas that some people do derech kablonis. But if you have something that's always done derech kablonis, nobody pays by the hour for these things. It's a kablonis, a good job. Everybody knows that it's being done derech kablonis, so maybe that concern doesn't apply. So that would be a nevalik of kulub b'zman hazeh. So let's say a guy wants to do construction on Shabbos. So he's building a house, fixing his house. So when he moves out of the house, he wants to get it as quick as possible. So the goyish contractors want to come on Shabbos. So according to that opinion, that even those who disagree with Rabbeinu Tam would be mekel. That would be a nevalik of kulub b'zman hazeh. So we try not to rely on that. The Rav Moshe has a tshuva about it, right? He doesn't think it's right to do that. It's a big resort of Shabbos, and we know for a fact it's a big resort. You walk in the streets of Jewish communities and you see people building houses on Shabbos. It's a terrible, terrible resort of Shabbos. So therefore we follow what Rav Moshe says, and the other person can say you should not do this. So the bottom line is that no construction should be taking place on Shabbos in any shape or form. And if the workers by some chance come on Shabbos, they should ask them very politely in a kind, lack of chil Hashem in a way to please get lost. We started doing construction on the shul a couple of months ago. So it was one Shabbos morning. So all of a sudden, I hear the rumbling of the trucks. So I know that sound from every other day of the week, but it's not supposed to be on Shabbos. They know that's supposed to be ain't gonna work on Saturday. So I went out, I asked him, my hi, so what are you guys doing here? He said, you know you're not supposed to be here today. So the guy's explaining to me, no, we're not really here. We're not really working. We just left some equipment here. We have to take the equipment for another job today, so we had to pick it up from here. So the guy said, I said, you're not supposed to be here. So the guy said, come on, it'll be 20 minutes, you know, we'll take that. So he wasn't really working. The emissary says he wasn't really working. He was really coming just to pick up, you know, pick up his equipment. So you could argue that. That's mamash his. It's clear I didn't talk to him. The other thing, the only thing is that nobody really understood all that. Everyone just sees, they see the trucks here, and they see they're picking up their equipment, throwing their, nobody's paying attention to what they're doing. So the guy couldn't have picked, he came at 8:30, just when the first Hashkan minion ends and the next minion starts. We had the most traffic possible at that time. We have 50 guys standing there and watching me argue with this guy, trying to figure. By the time they finished arguing, they were done already. They were smarter than me. They as they were arguing, the other guys were working. They were so no, okay.
Two questions. One, it's only Marasayim with the VP issue of the Fisha Yasu. Did they work?
I'm not sure. The Paiskim say that this Isser would only apply if there's a Jewish community, if there are people around the sea. So I remember somebody once called me with a shayla that they own some property, I think in Newark or somewhere, some not exactly, here by Envy Israel, and they wanted to have some construction continue to be done then, so that Mikra, then it's okay. If it's literally, I mean, the folks know about Ad Tchum, you don't need Ad Tchum, nobody's going to Newark on Shabbos, so no one's going to see it anyway, so maybe that's not a problem. You had another question also?
That was the second question.
Good question.
We said before that you can't ask the guy to turn on the light because they're going to get on up. If he also gets on, is that okay?
Right, so if he's doing it for himself and then you're kind of schlepping along, that would be okay.
So you should invite him in for a little bit so he could.
It's another shout, about that, yeah. There's an interesting shout about, let's say a guy turns, it happens all the time. You have someone working in your house, and they turn off the light, and then they realize, oof, they goofed, so they turn it back on again. So is that called for you or is that called for them? So the place came and make that call for them. They're doing it. They don't really care about the light on. They don't want to get yelled at for turning off the light. So that's called they're doing to protect their own reputation, not you. I remember years ago, I know you guys, before you guys found the old Homewreck Hotel. You remember? Heard about it? It's a famous hotel in the Catskills. So it's like the last of the Mohicans, last of the Jewish hotels from that Tekufa. So it was once, this goes back 30 years ago before I was married. That they were my parents for Shabbos, and I was sitting and learning in one of the rooms there Friday night, one of like near the lobby or something, and one of the goyim came to clean up, and he didn't see that I was there, so he turned off the light, and then as soon as he turned it off, he must have as he was turning it off, he noticed I was there, so he said, "Oh, I'm so sorry," and he turns it back on again. So at the time, I didn't know that cool about that he's doing it to protect himself. I thought that's cool that he's doing it with Tzarchei Yisrael. So the room was mamish pitch black. If there was a little bit of light coming in from the outside, you could fetch, you could read a little bit. Okay, so then that's not really cool being Nenim and Hamalacha. But if it's mamish pitch black, you can't read. So I left the room. So I didn't continue to learn. And then years later, when I realized that kula, that if he's a worker that's doing it, not because he loves you, he's doing it because he doesn't want you to go to the front desk and scream, why is the worker turning off the lights on Shabbos and ruining it for us? So that would probably be more difficult for me to continue because that's being done l'tzorech ha'akum. It's always tricky when you have to figure out whether something's being done l'tzorech ha'akum, l'tzorech Yisrael. The Gemara says, what if you have a city with both Jews and Goyim? So, and Goyim are doing, let's say he's doing malacha on behalf of the Bnei Ha'ir. So is that called a Day Yisrael and a Goyim, depending what the rov is? So the post can discuss about the Dunkin' Donuts when they're making donuts on Saturday afternoon. They're going to be sold on the Tzor Shabbos. So if their kavana is for all the Jewish customers going to come, so maybe that's a problem. If their kavana is for the goyim, you know, there'll be some Jews will come also, but it's mostly, believe it or not, there are more goyim than Jews in Tinek, so the Tinek Dunkin' Donuts is making donuts, so they're probably making it on the goyim. So that gets a little bit tricky, because it could be that by, the Mitzvah Shabbos run may be more Jews than goyim who are eating those donuts, so I don't know, think about that one more. Okay, anyway, everybody's saying, I think we can see him on Shabbos for as ludicrous as that may sound, but well, at least for this year's plus biggest shout out to everybody for joining us to the very end. Okay. What's next?